Hello and welcome to the next episode of Let's Talk Security Testing, the podcast where we deep dive into all things security testing. My name is Ben Armstrong.
And I'm Tom Ballin.
And today we're going to dive into the evolution of automated testing. And where better to start with a conversation about evolution than right at the beginning? So, Tom, why don't you take us through what you understand to be the evolution as far back as you could possibly go?
Right, as far back as we could possibly go. I think we could probably go back about as far as 1960, 1965, I think it was, when security testing first started to be a thing. Effectively, people found that there were some weaknesses in the ways that you authenticated with these time-shared computer systems, and you could log into these systems when you weren't supposed to be able to. And there's a conference about it, people had conversations, and that sort of instigated people starting to think they should start doing some more probing into these systems. And most of these systems lived inside universities, so it became one of those sort of projects that the university students and researchers started looking into, and effectively they started scripting up ways to be able to test across a broad range of different systems. And so I think that probably constitutes the first scanners, these automated authentication testing and probing systems. And effectively, automated scanning technologies grew from there. So where, first of all, authentication testing was a nice and easy and straightforward one, the next thing that people started to be able to do was look at network discovery, trying to scan and find what assets were out there. People introduced port scanners and tried to catalogue what the estate actually started to look like. And then spread out into more different services, and people started to look at various different ways that you could be able to fingerprint services and enumerate them and figure out exactly what it was, what the attack surface was that you might then be able to perform some manual testing against. Some of the first scanners that came into effect after that point, some of the first actual vulnerability scanners that came into effect after that point were infrastructure related. It was a natural evolution from port scanning to proper infrastructure vulnerability scanning. And effectively, they just look for versions of software that had known vulnerabilities within them. And over time, over the sort of 20 or 30 years, that grew out into more sophisticated scanner technologies that was actually able to do active exploitation. And they were pulling from things like public databases where hackers and security researchers were publishing these individual modules that says, if you want to compromise this system, this is the script that you do it. And the aggregate of that was this sophisticated vulnerability scanner. Interestingly, open source came before commercial in this. So open source scanners and aggregate frameworks of different exploits was the precursor to what we have now, which is a much more mature, what we call vulnerability management landscape, right? Where you have these expensive commercial off-the-shelf tools that are able to find all of these different technologies. But they grew out from this original way of being able to automate some of the more boring elements of a security test.
That makes sense. And if we're talking about when tools became sort of mainstream, or when security testing became mainstream, because I guess the two run in parallel, what are some of the sort of notable tools that you can think of that really changed the game when they came out and released? And most of these things start in their infancy with individual researchers, and then they go on to become commercial tools. But go on, give us a couple of your personal favourites.
I think most of the people who get into security testing start off just doing it as a hobby in their spare time. So typically it is those open source free versions of tools that people really cut their teeth on. Like, three of the tools that I personally started off using were Metasploit Framework, which again is just an aggregated combination of different exploits, and there are also some additional tools within there, but effectively it's just a very, very large list of different exploits for different technologies. And that has been adopted and turned into. There is a commercial scanner that's available for it now, but the framework is still alive and strong and used by security testers pretty much every day that they're doing infrastructure testing particularly. The second one is ZAP, Zed Attack Proxy. So while a lot of people who are doing this professionally do look at things like Burp Suite, for example, which does have a few friendlier features and a bit more support around it, I'm pretty sure every security researcher who started looking at web application testing started with something like ZAP. It's awesome, right? If you've got no knowledge at all and you're really wanting to learn to begin with, you can just for free download it off the internet, and it's like one of the most downloaded, top 10 most downloaded tools on the whole of GitHub, I think. You can type in a URL, you can click go, and it'll come back with a list of potential vulnerabilities. But equally, if you've been doing security testing for 20, 30 years, you've got deep, deep knowledge and deep, deep understanding. You can customize it, you can tune it, you can make it very, very sophisticated in what it's capable of doing. So a low barrier to entry, but a massive opportunity to be able to explore and learn off of the back of what it's able to help support you in doing. And then the third one is OpenVAS. OpenVAS is actually a fork from the same project as a more popular commercial tool, which is Nessus, Tenable's vulnerability scanner. OpenVAS is awesome. It's capable of doing a massive amount of heavy lifting when it comes to finding common vulnerabilities. It's a pain in the neck to install, so lots of people try and avoid it. But if you actually get past that initial barrier and that initial hurdle, then you know it's as good a tool as any to be able to find infrastructure, specifically vulnerabilities in a typical network security assessment.
And why is it that we have so many different tools, right? You know, like, I appreciate every tool will have comparative tools, and that's just the same in any walk of life. You know, this is 2024. Everything's, you know, you've always got multiple choices for everything. But talk to me about why we have different tools that do completely different things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things that goes into that from my perspective. The main reason why I would choose one tool over another is because they work with different technology stacks, right? The industry information technology is vast, right? You've got servers running on Windows and servers running on Linux. You've got infrastructure as code. You've got applications running on various different code bases, from JavaScript to ASP and Java, and all sorts of different ways and shapes that you can build out your different environments. So trying to expect a scanner or automated technology to be one size fits all is unrealistic in that respect. But it also comes down to the way that those tools can be orchestrated themselves. So you've got tools that need a person in order to feed and water them. They need to be fine-tuned, and they can find some brilliant things when they do that, which is great if you've got internal security engineers who are happy to do that, who have the depth of knowledge and the time to be able to actually set those tools up in the way that they need to be set up. But you also need tools that effectively are just sort of point and click, and you can just set it to repeat, and it's a very, very simple scheduling process that produces a bunch of different results. The use case is vast and wide. There are other things as well to factor. So, for instance, a different tool is good at finding things at runtime, a different tool is good at finding things at static code. Some tools produce more false positives but more detailed output, and other tools provide more reliable output. But you know, it all just comes down to the fact that there's not a one-size-fits-all in the way that people build their infrastructure and operate it, and so there can't be a one-size-fits-all in the way that people build and operate their tools as well.
Got it. So tools have got pretty good over the last few years, but there are still some pretty old ones that are still in use. You can buy them from vendors, you can open source them. I think that's a pretty good overview. So let's move into what they're really good at. Now, I want you to be really careful here, because we're going to discuss what they're bad at soon. So anyone listening, we're not just sitting here hyping up tools. We will come on to the problems with them. But let's focus on what they're really good at, because I think they get a lot of stick, and yet people keep buying them, and they're buying them for obvious reasons, right? Two that come off the top of my head straight away are the speed at which they can produce output, and their cost. If we're looking at the alternative, if we're looking at the alternative being nothing, then they're quite expensive. But if we're looking at the alternative being human testers, then obviously they're incredibly cheap. What's your take on that? Are they too valid?
Yeah, I think they are. They are valid. There is also repeatability.
Uh-huh.
If you want to understand how you are performing consistently over time, then being able to run the same set of tests reliably, knowing that effectively what you can then start to do is draw that trend line over time, whether it's more vulnerabilities or less vulnerabilities, or even better still, whenever you're making a specific kind of change, being able to orchestrate the same playbook of testing actions over time, mm-hmm. and being able to understand how doing this change correlates to these kinds of vulnerabilities is an incredibly powerful way of being able to refine your internal development processes and engineering processes to be able to prevent those vulnerabilities from ever coming about in the first place. Whereas if what you're doing is bringing somebody in once a year to run these tools or to do what manual testing can do, then you're not getting that same level of, you're not getting that short feedback loop that actually informs the process. So I think automation is underrated in its ability to just give you consistency in output.
Yeah, but see, my problem with this is we talk about automation and we talk about humans almost as if one's playing rugby and the other's playing cricket, right? Like, well, that's obviously different to that. That one gets coverage and that one gets depth. That's not true, though, is it? One isn't playing rugby and the other one isn't playing cricket. They're both doing the same thing. They're both trying to get to the same outcome. And assuming in that, then, they're both doing a hell of a lot of each other's work.
Yeah.
So explain to me in a little bit more depth what tools are good at, and does that influence manual testing already, or should it influence how we go about doing manual testing?
Yeah, well, it's a Venn diagram. If security testing is one circle, automated tools are one circle and manual testing is another circle, those circles are moving closer and closer together every single year. But it is still a Venn diagram. Look, in terms of the overlap, in most situations, it's obviously more advantageous to have an automated tool finding those things. So classic misconfigurations, things like HTTP security headers, weak cipher suites, unpatched versions of software, even some more sophisticated things like some SQL injection and cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. These are all things that tools are incredibly good at being able to probe systems and finding. With some of those more sophisticated ones, the reason why that overlap is still necessary is because they do sometimes make mistakes, they do sometimes introduce false positives, but they are still able to. If you've got an 100,000 form field application, they are still able to cover that entire application reliably and consistently and find a large variety of those security, of potential security vulnerabilities, even if they do need a little bit of sanity checking and tweaking and teasing out of some of those false positives. In terms of the things that tools can do that humans can't do, I think that is the main thing, right? That is why tools don't just sit inside the circle of manual testing, is because tools can get a level of coverage across massive ecosystems in a way that even if you gave a person or 1,000 people all of the time in the world, you couldn't reliably do, because you can't track and you can't manage that sort of a scale of things. And it is a massive scale. People's applications and people's networks are ridiculously big and complicated these days.
For those listening, I'm a commercial bod. But 5 years ago, 5-10 years ago, this it was clear as day when you were trying to explain the difference between a scanner and a human tester. And anybody that sort of said otherwise effectively didn't really understand the difference between a scanner and a tester or a human tester. Where are we now? Because if what you're talking about is tools are getting better and better and better, assuming they're not getting better at something else other than finding more, better, higher quality vulnerabilities. So I'm assuming what they're then doing, what we're talking about, is automated tools becoming closer and closer to human testers whilst retaining their core competency of speed and coverage. They're actually, they might be running a bit faster and they might be getting more coverage, but I'm assuming what we're talking about is them being able to find more and more things that typically would have taken a human to find. And if that is the case, throw some numbers at me. What are we talking about? Are we saying that tools are better than humans now? Are we saying that they're a lot closer to humans than they used to be? Where are we on that journey?
I mean, I'd be reluctant to say one's better or worse because it's different horses for different courses, right? It depends what your end objective is. It depends what the complexity of your environment is and your capacity to be able to deal with the overhead that comes with orchestrating the tools and interpreting the results versus maybe a more refined output that you might get from a person, although equally a person more expensive, so your ability to be able to actually pay for that. But yeah, I mean, the big differentiator between automation and people always used to be the context around how one vulnerability might interact with another, the context around what areas of an application might need to be tested for specific things. You know, the lack of context was a limiting factor to tools being able to compete with people. But these days, that's not as true. You've got attack path mapping, and you've got ASPM, and you've got RASP, for example. These are all ways of being able to identify vulnerabilities that have a deep, deep level of context ingrained into the tools that actually allow them to be able to find things that are much, much more sophisticated than sometimes people would be able to, where people are limited by the information that they get made available to them. You know, if you talk to an average penetration tester, you'll find out that they're still not provided with a lot of the kinds of pieces of useful nuggets of information that, if they were provided with, would enable them to find these vulnerabilities. But the tools are they're ingrained in. You know, they're fed with the change information. They're fed with the code information. They're fed with information at runtime. And so, yeah, they actually do have this richness of context. As a cop-out answer, it depends whether a tool's better than a person's better. But I think you could make a strong argument these days that there are. The reason I think a lot of people are reluctant, or the reason that message I don't think gets out there as much these days, is because the people who are best at judging whether a tool's any good or not are usually security testers. And usually a security tester, when I have a conversation with people and they say, oh, you know, tools can't do this, tools can't do that, tools can't do the other, you know, there's a bit of a defensiveness that goes on there. I'm guilty of it myself. You know, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, I'd have given you a big long list of things that I didn't believe that tools could possibly do. And I think that was mostly because I didn't want to believe that tools could possibly do these things that I thought was so sophisticated and complex that it could only be done by a senior and experienced tester. But the reality is that's not the case. People are building these deep, deep, complex and interesting tools that are able to do these things. And that's only going to get more and more true as we move into worlds where things like LLMs and AI capability allow it to even have richer context still.
That's a lovely segue onto my last the last point I'll make on this section, which is shininess. We haven't spoken about shininess. These things are really easy to market, right? ASPM, CNAPP, breach attack simulation, automated validation. I'm sure yourself and all of our listeners have heard these terms. We used to call them vulnerability scanners. Where did that go? And is shininess, or feel free to come up with a better word, a good thing when it comes to the betterment of security testing programs in businesses?
Where did it go? You know, I think a lot of it went when the marketing teams got hired with the VC money, you know.
Careful what you say now.
But no, the I think removing the barrier to adoption of these tools has been very, very important. Like I say, the tools started off as scripts that you used by hackers, and they did not have very friendly user interfaces, and they did not seem very appealing to the wide business. You know, it felt like you were a hacker doing hacker things, even if you were using a scanner. And that's, you know, that's great for empowering security testers to feel, you know, feel cool to themselves. But it's really, really bad if what you want is an engineer or a developer to be running one of these tools just in the day-to-day and interacting with it as part of their job. So I think, you know, while making something look shiny and making something look flashy with all these dashboards and all these widgets shouldn't be the primary objective when you're building one of these tools. Considering the user and considering how it's going to be accepted by the business is something that in recent years people have started to recognize as being much, much more important when you actually do set out on this journey of creating a security tool.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And whilst I think we do need to go a little bit deeper than calling everything vulnerability scanners, because these things do very, very different jobs. I definitely think that there's a line that we may or we may not have crossed. Final point. All right, let's talk about the problems, because it's not all great, is it? So I think before we talk about the problems, I think let's start with some insight. Can you just talk to me about fundamentally why are tools different than humans? Do these tools have a human brain inserted into the server over in California somewhere, or do they work in a different way? And what is that different way? What are the fundamental concepts that sit underneath these tools that provide them the limitations that they have?
So, yeah, I mean, I think tools don't work in the same way as people. That their approach is different, but equally, one of the biggest differences between what a good security assessment tool or otherwise, and what a good and a bad security assessment is the ability to be able to understand what or interpret what the output means for the wider business. You know, you can find SQL injection vulnerabilities until your fingers are exhausted, but if you're not able to communicate that SQL injection vulnerability jeopardizes personally identifiable information or intellectual property in some way, then the value of knowing that that exists is diminished. So, you know, one of the best things to do at the end of any security assessment with a person is to sit down with the customer and say, here's what I found, help me understand what it means. And tools don't do that. Equally, people, like I say, going back to what I said earlier, what they're not very good at is being able to analyze massive, massive complex systems with a very, very large volume of data. Tools are able to do that. So scale, tools are brilliant at. Context, tools are getting better at, but they still aren't able to do all of the same rationalizing. I think, yeah, that's it. Not even context, it's rationalizing.
So what they're doing effectively is they are pre-programmed to attempt to make something, let's talk about web app, let's make an input field do a bunch of things, and then when the expected output does or doesn't happen, then it flags that up as an issue. But it's largely rules-based. So it's looking for vulnerabilities in the confines of the person that built the tools, you know, whatever the tool's programmed to look for. It's not going to think beyond what is programmed to think.
Yeah, it's positive and negative test cases usually. You know, if something is as binary as it is there or it is not there, then tools are usually pretty good at being able to find it. But if something's as complex as saying, what does this information on this screen mean in the in the context of the organization. You know, is this error message valuable to me because it tells me it tells me the inner workings of the business and the business processes. Like I say, tools are getting better at being able to interpret a lot of that, so I've got to be careful about what I say here, because I'm sure there are some shiny tools that are getting incredibly good at this. But nevertheless, where tools have always been stronger is in those true and false test cases.
And this is where the false positives happen, and this can infuriate certain people. But what we're really talking about when we say false positives is the tools try to do something. It's not got the expected response. It's got a different response. And it says, hey, I've got a different response, and this is this vulnerability. But then more often than not, what can happen is a developer or an engineer can come to check that vulnerability and go to fix it and go, what are they talking about? That is expected output to the builder of the product. Mm-hmm. But the tool is seen that as unexpected output. And that's quite often the context piece that we're talking about, right? Is that when tools are built, they're built to generalize. And often when people build their own products, they build them in a very specific way. And what we're trying to do with APIs, and this is not a security thing, by the way, but what we're trying to do with APIs, what we're trying to do with applications, is push the boundaries. We're trying to make them do things they've not done before. You know, and there's lots of different types of software, right? You've got the difference between a brochureware site, you've got a banking application. Look at it, insurance. They can have one page with, you know, 500 inputs because you've got to work through these long forms. You know, lots of these systems are very, very different from one another. And I think, you know, this does make it quite difficult to have sort of generic tools. Moving on, because we need to wrap up soon. Quick things, problems with tools. Feeding and watering. What sort of intent? How labor intensive are tools? And is it just a buy it and no longer need humans?
Well, like I said, if you're not doing any scanning or any security testing whatsoever, there is a load of value in downloading a tool like Zap or like OpenVAS, getting it installed, and just clicking go on it. You will get some results out. Some of it will be false positives. Some of it will be really valuable information for you to be able to understand how you're performing. You will not get the most out of those tools, but you will still get a lot. If you do want to get the most out of those tools, there's a lot of feeding and watering that still needs to go on with them. You know, they can be fine-tuned to within an inch, where they are specific to your environment. They've got lots and lots of different users available to them. They're able to filter out a lot of the noise and a lot of the vulnerabilities that couldn't even potentially be there within your environment but might flag up as false positives. And then once you've got them into that state, coming back to them and correcting them as you make changes to your environment as well is going to be necessary in order to keep them operating effectively, right? Because the tools are moving in terms of the things they can detect, and your environment's moving in terms of the features and the functionality and whatever else it might be that actually needs to be tested. So keeping them up to date can be a lot of hassle, but there is also value in just bringing them in their most foundational form.
And so finally, just to wrap up, let's get this closed out. Biggest takeaway. What's my biggest takeaway from today? I think that it's important to understand the strength of tools and the limitations of tools and use them wisely inside a security testing program. It is not just it's not like it used to be. It's not just a case of, well, that's a vulnerability scanner, that'll scan this, and then I can get a human tester at the end of the year. You know, that approach might still work, you know, at SMB or people that are just starting to look at cybersecurity, but you know, There's far too much out there, like too much quality out there, even free quality, like when we've spoken about the open source tools, not to be putting together a robust security testing program. There really isn't anywhere to hide. Like, you know, with a bit of thinking and maybe even a bit of consultancy, you can put together a fairly comprehensive program for very little cost in 2024.
I think my takeaway is, as a sort of tabletop exercise, there is value in drawing out that Venn diagram of things that you believe that you have tools or could introduce tools to be able to cover in terms of your security testing requirements, and then the things that, that you don't believe that tools could be able to cover, the things that you believe that people are able to cover. If you draw that diagram out, you can understand where those gaps are, you can understand where those overlaps are, and hopefully remove some of the reliance on manual testing.
Perfect. So for those listening, our next episode that we're going to be releasing next week is going to be about how to maximize the value from human pen testers. That'll be a really, really good one, so make sure not to miss it. And you'll find us on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, and all of your favorite platforms. Catch you next week.
Bye now.